Hello and welcome to this episode of Thrill of the Hill. My name's Alec Perry, and this is the Farm Advisory Service series where we discuss the hot topics impacting the farmed upland environment. In today's episode of Thrill of the Hill, I'm joined by two guest speakers. First up, and joining us from NatureScot, we have Robert Rayner. And also joining us from the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust is Scott Newey for a broad discussion on mountain hare in Scotland. We talk about the characteristics of the species, its contribution to our natural environment, the habitat in which it finds itself, and why the species has found a home in Scotland's moorlands. Hello, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. And how's yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. This is going to be a good episode. And we're also joined by Scott. Scott, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
Fantastic. Likewise, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Rob, can I just get us kicked off with a bit of an introduction as to who you are and some of the work that you're undertaking as part of NatureScot?
My job is as a mammal specialist, mammals advisor in NatureScot. I've been doing this job for many years, actually, and I get involved in advising on conservation issues with protected mammals mainly. That's things like otters, badgers, mountain hares, bats, these sort of things. I'm involved heavily in policy as well, in terms of conservation policy and that side of things, as well as giving advice on casework and issues to do with things that affect these sort of species. And mountain hares are one of the species that I am involved with and have been for quite a few years now, obviously because there's been some concern but in the past about what's happening with mountain hares. And so, yes, for 15 years at least, I've been working with mountain hares now and quite closely with Scott on much of it as well. So.
Perfect. No, that's great. And Scott, you're also joining us this afternoon. Can we just get a bit of an introduction as to who you are and the kind of work that you're involved in?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a senior scientist with the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust Scotland Uplands team. I had the great pleasure, but at times frustrating job of the last 25 years working on mountain hares in one way or another, trying to understand their population dynamics, and particularly how we monitor and survey this species.
Brilliant. So this is going to be a slightly different episode today. Obviously, we've got the two of you on, but can we just get a brief kind of overview of why mountain hare are important? What is their place within a wider biodiversity context in Scotland? And we'll start with Rob.
Okay, so mountain hares are our only native lagomorph. That's the hares and rabbits to everyone else. The other two lagomorphs, the rabbits and the brown hare, are both introduced a long time ago. But so they're naturalised effectively, but they're not part of our native fauna. Whereas the mountain hare is and has been since the last ice age. So it's part of our upland. Upland ecosystem, if you like. It's a boreal species. So it's meaning that it naturally occurs in the boreal zone of northern Europe and northern Asia. We don't have much in the way of boreal forest left in Scotland. Most of it's been cut down. So mountain hares are more typically seen in open hillsides in Scotland than they are in other parts of northern Europe, for example. Because they're a key part of the upland ecosystem, they're important as prey for birds like golden eagles, for example, key prey item for golden eagles. So very important from that point of view.
And Scott, any thoughts on the species as a whole?
Not much more to add to what Rob's already said. I mean, they're a herbivorous species. They can be incredibly numerous at times in our uplands. Historically, of course, they have been an important game species, shot for recreation and sport. And obviously, that has raised a controversy over the years. Scientifically, mountain hares are interesting because they show these cyclic population dynamics. That's my initial interest in mountain hares, was trying to understand what drives these cyclic population dynamics. So they're an absolutely fascinating species.
And Rob, in the historic context, has the species been in decline across the country? I mean, what is the conservation status of the mountain hare today?
That's an interesting question. There has been a decline in recent years that's been based on evidence from BTO bird surveys mainly, but also other sources as well. There's been several long-term pieces of work that have gone on looking at mountain hares trends, population trends over decades since, you know, sort of the latter part of the last century. And not all the information is consistent. It doesn't all necessarily show the same thing. So it is quite a confusing picture. But when we reviewed the status of mountain hares for the last report for the Habitats Directive, the European Habitats Directive, which was in 2019 was the last report we submitted to Europe. The conclusion was that it was what we call unfavourable, inadequate, which means that there's some evidence of decline, but we're not sure of the extent or exactly what's going on with the trend. And because, as Scott mentioned, it's the mountain hares have a very cyclical population pattern, and this can make it quite difficult to pick out population trends over time because they're going through these long population cycles. With this uncertainty, we couldn't conclude that they were favourable, and we couldn't say for sure that they were actually unfavourable. So the alternative in the directive's options were basically unfavourable and inadequate, which means we don't know enough about what's happening, but there is some evidence of a decline.
And Scott, how do you see the species performing across Scotland? I mean, are they in decline? I mean, what's your take on the species?
I mean, as Rob said, it's very difficult to make a definitive decision on the status of the mountain hares in Scotland. They're a surprisingly difficult species to accurately count and estimate their populations. They show these amazing cyclic dynamics. So they're over long term, over sort of 10, 12 years, their numbers can change over tenfold on any particular area. In the northeast of Scotland, these cycles are around about 10 years. But as you move further south in Scotland, the populations become less pronounced and also shorter in duration. So it's very difficult to identify a long-term trend from these data. You need many, many years of reliable count data. And our ability to make a definitive decision on this has really been confounded by the fact that there's been no mountain hare specific surveys in Scotland. All of the information that we have is incidental data that comes from studies done on other species. So there is some data that shows declines and some data that doesn't show declines. It's a very confusing picture.
And what kind of scale of activity would it be then, Scott, for us to undertake a meaningful survey of mountain hare in Scotland?
That's a very good question that we spend quite a lot of time between us trying to work out. I don't know the answer, but is this the simple question? Mountain hares are probably far more widespread than it is generally realised. Although they are, you know, very much associated, we know, with managed moorland in the northeast of Scotland, they do occur throughout Scotland at much lower densities. So one of the things we might want to talk about later on is that the Volunteer Mountain Hare Survey, which is a project between Nature Scot, British Trust for Ornithology, and the Mammal Society and the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, you know, to engage as many people as we can that are involved in the outdoors to try and contribute information to our understanding of what's happening to mountain hares in Scotland.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll come to that. Rob, just going back to yourself, I mean, what challenges does modern farming or the upland environment present for the species currently? And this is Thrill of the Hill, and we're predominantly interested in factors that are impacting the farmed upland environment. I mean, What does modern farming mean for the mountain hare?
Well, I suppose some of the challenges would be improvement of marginal ground on the fringes of moorland areas. If that ground is improved and more of the heather moorland is encroached upon and improved, that's going to be bad news for mountain hares usually, because it's creating a less favourable habitat for them that also is likely to be more attractive to the brown hare, which is a lowland species mainly. But it's, you know, there is some overlap in the range of these. They do overlap in some areas, and they can hybridize, and that's obviously something we want to keep an eye on and avoid, clearly. So yes, habitat fragmentation is another thing that we would be concerned about. So that would be, has been in the past, principally because of a large scale commercial conifer forestation of the uplands. That's an issue, and clearly will continue to be, I suspect. Habitat fragmentation through forestry and improvement of the marginal areas would be the areas of concern, I would suggest.
So what kind of habitats are being lost through improvement? I mean, in an ideal scenario, where do we find these species?
In Scotland, the areas where they're most abundant, or can be most abundant, is, as Scott has mentioned, is on managed grouse moors, where the heather is burnt regularly and predators are controlled. So obviously that's going to benefit the hares along with red grouse. It seems that the two species seem to have similar requirements and benefit from the same sorts of management. So that's one of the reasons why we think mountain hares, do so well in these areas often. But it should be remembered that these habitats, the grouse moors, are entirely a man-made habitat, effectively, and not naturally where this animal would occur. And they would normally occur in a more of a wooded environment, an upland wooded environment that you typically see in places like Norway, where the uplands tend to be more diverse in terms of the range of species and habitats that you get. You get the areas of scrubby woodland and birch woodland and juniper and these sort of things growing there, which you don't see so much of in Scotland because of the way the land has been traditionally managed for a long time. So it's worth bearing that in mind when considering, you know, where hares occur in Scotland and where they would more naturally occur in other parts of Europe and Northern Asia.
Do you know, that's really interesting. So, Scott, I don't know if you knew this already, but at the beginning of what I'm calling season four, our first episode was on predator control. Immediately prior to that, we had the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust on discussing game bird management in the uplands. It strikes me that what Rob has just said there is that, you know, there is that symbiosis between the mountain hare and good grouse moor management. Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so the evidence we have is that mountain hares are strongly associated with and can be far more numerous, 10 to 100 times more numerous on moorland that is managed for grouse shooting compared to areas of moorland that are less intensely managed for shooting or out with areas that are managed for shooting. And it certainly seems the mountain hares do benefit from the habitat management and predator control that is carried out as part of grouse moor management. And they can reach very high densities of, you know, 100 to even 200 hares or more per square kilometre at times in some places on areas of managed moorland. And that is very, very unusual, although that there are records of mountain hares reaching incredibly high densities on some isolated Swedish islands and in other areas of Scandinavia where there has been intensive predator control.
So without this management then, just picking up on what you said about the population density there, without the kind of proactive predator control and heather management, would these populations collapse or would they disperse into other habitats?
I think the populations would just look very different. I mean, as Rob's already alluded to, you know, throughout most of their range, mountain hares are arboreal species, sort of open woodland or scrub habitat. and in the European Alps, you know, they occur in the upper reaches of a woodland range or even above the tree line in summer. So they're very much a scrub species in those environments. So I think in the absence of predator control and habitat management, mangin hares will probably persist, but they'd very likely be at much lower densities.
And what is it about the predator control? I mean, what species are we targeting when we're relieving pressure on mountain hare?
Principally fox, I would imagine, because of the foxes are so intensely controlled on grouse moors, it's very difficult to actually study, you know, what is predating or what would predate mountain hares if these species weren't controlled. But in Scandinavia, fox is certainly one of the most important predators of mountain hare.
And what kind of heather management are we undertaking then? I mean, what kind of heather environment are we looking to achieve?
On the moorland that's managed for driven grouse shooting, you know, the land managers undertake rotational burning of heather, you know, generally called a muir burn, where the land managers burn stands of old rank heather to produce a mosaic of habitats from freshly burned areas where there's grass coming through to young heather favoured by grouse for feeding, and mountain hares for feeding, to the older tall heather, again favoured by grouse and mountain hares as a nesting or resting habitat.
And Rob, what kind of practices could farmers undertake here in Scotland that would improve the outlook for the species?
That's an interesting question. And going back to what I was saying before about the marginal areas, and I suppose the obvious thing is it would be to avoid improving marginal ground to become so that it's, you know, so that heather moorland is retained and that those marginal areas are not expanded into that area there of heather is obviously a beneficial thing for hares, and avoiding planting large amounts of commercial conifers is another thing on existing heather moorland. It's difficult to say what farmers could do to improve it. But as I say, we're looking, I suppose, you know, ideally in the longer term at a more diverse upland ecosystem in Scotland. I think, you know, we're looking for you know, the range of land uses that we currently have, but hopefully, you know, more of a more areas that are perhaps more semi-natural in nature and more akin to what you see in Scandinavia. So possibly, you know, to use that overused term, a more holistic approach to habitats in the uplands rather than focusing on one or two species of interest so much. Obviously, there's always going to be an interest in managing in grouse moors and things like that, I suspect. But we would ideally like to see that, but also other areas that are managed for more widely for wider biodiversity as well.
And just off the back of that, maybe one for yourself, Scott. I mean, what in terms of the lessons that can be learned that could be expanded to the broader farming community? I mean, what kind of lessons are there with regards to predator control and how we're managing the uplands? I mean, by the sounds of it, you know, we're doing it fairly successfully if the population density is anything to go by.
I mean, mountain hares are an upland species in Scotland. In the northeast of Scotland and areas where there is managed grouse moor, they certainly seem to benefit from that type of management. They don't really occur on farmland. You know, most of their distribution is, you know, above any improved pasture. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Rob said, you know, anything that is going to result in the loss of moorland, it's likely to be to the detriment of mountain hare populations as we currently understand them. You know, mountain hares have this huge distribution, you know, from the west coast of Ireland all through, you know, the UK, the Scandinavia, you know, through Russia, all the way over towards Japan. So they occur in a very wide range of habitats. So I think that they are quite robust, but you know, future populations in Scotland with land management change, land cover change, and climate change are just likely to look very different.
So, I mean, that in itself is an interesting question. I mean, does climate change present a particular issue for the species? I mean, is it likely to impact them in the long term?
We don't really know. As with so many things with climate change, there's just so many unknowns. You might argue that climate change may be positive for mountain hares. You know, if we increase the growing season of grasses, maybe the winters become less severe, that may benefit mountain hares. However, you know, mountain hares thrive in this very marginal, very harsh landscape. And it's possible that they may be outcompeted as if winters became milder. Brown hares, particular, may move up the hill. Rabbits may also move up the hill. We may also get changes in the prevalence of diseases or parasites that may have negative effects on mountain hares. And some of the work we did a few years ago also shown that the molt pattern in mountain hares isn't changing along with climate change. Mountain hares are spending just as much time in their white winter coat as they were several decades ago, even though there is far less snow cover in the Scottish uplands on average. Whether that's going to have a positive or negative effect on their populations, we really don't know. But whether that is really going to have an effect on mountain hares or not, we just don't know at the moment.
And it was mentioned earlier on in the podcast that hybridization is an issue for the species. I wonder, Rob, could you talk a little bit more about that?
I could, but I think I don't know. It's not something that we know very much about. I think Scott may know more, but it has been recorded. But as far as I know, in Scotland, it's very very rare at the moment. Is that your view, Scott?
Again, I would say we don't really know the situation in Scotland. There are certainly lots of anecdotal reports of hybrid mountain hare, brown hares, and you certainly do see some strange looking mountain hares out and about on the hill, but we simply don't have any quantified records of the distribution of hybrids. Hybridization in Scandinavia, there are a lot of concerns about brown hares mating with mountain hares, and brown hares and the brown hare hybrids being competitively superior to the native mountain hare, and the native mountain hare is being supplanted in parts of Scandinavia with brown hares and brown hare hybrids.
And Scott, you mentioned some of the work that you're involved in with the likes of the Mammal Society earlier on in the podcast. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, over the years, Nature Scott have been wrestling with this problem of how to monitor mountain hares to assess their conservation status. And we've looked at various methods over the years that will give us some very accurate and precise methods, but they're very labor intensive, sometimes quite intrusive. So how we monitor mountain hares at a landscape or at a national scale is a real challenge. And so we sort of settled on this idea of trying to work with a whole range of stakeholders and outdoor recreationalists in a so-called citizen science project called the Volunteer Mountain Hare Survey. And this is a Nature Scott funded initiative working with the British Trust for Ornithology Scotland and the Mammal Society and the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust to try to engage with all sorts of outdoor users to record the distribution and the numbers of mountain hares that people might see whilst they're out hill walking or just walking the dog. And any records are useful. Although I really should stress that negative records are also just as useful, not just positive records. And we're also working with the game management community, who are undertaking far more formal surveys of mountain hares on some estates. And we hope that all these different strands of information and data can be used to give us a far more rigorous assessment of the status of mountain hares.
Well, by all means, if you would like us to add any of that information into the show notes for the podcast, I'm more than happy to do that. Robert, do you feel positive about the outlook for the species in general? I mean, and I'll maybe expand that a little. I mean, how do you feel about the outlook for the uplands in general? We're coming into quite an exciting time in terms of agriculture and policy development and where that's going. I mean, where do you think that we're going to end up with the uplands?
Ooh, yeah, that's a big question, isn't it? I suppose, well, first of all, from the perspective of mountain hares, generally, I think that we can. There's room to feel more positive now. They've been given legal protection now since 2021. So that gives us in NatureScot effectively control over how many hares can legally be controlled under license for certain purposes, such as damage to growing trees, etc. Prior to that protection, that we had very little influence or control over how many hares were being culled, and there were we estimate there to be in those days tens of thousands a year were being shot on moorlands across Scotland. Although we didn't have accurate numbers, but it was certainly in that order of magnitude. In terms of the status of a species and the protection, I think there's room to be optimistic, and I think there's also room to be optimistic in terms of how we view the future of the uplands as well, and how they may look in 50 or 100 years time. I think we would like to see a greater diversity of species and habitats in the upland areas, but whilst retaining the range of land uses that we need. So I think that there is room for optimism there as well, that by creating some more areas that are more semi-natural in appearance, we'll have a greater level of biodiversity in these areas, more species, etc. So I think there is some hope for the optimistic there, but again, we need to be aware of what the effects of climate change could be in all of this, and how climate change may change things in ways that we can't control, obviously. So I think that kind of underlines the reason why we need to have a good handle on what's happening with mountain hare populations, and why our voluntary mountain hares scheme that we have with GWCT and BTO and Mammal Society is important in helping us get a handle on that and measuring change in the future.
And Scott, I suppose just the same question to yourself. I mean, do you feel positive about the outlook of the species and the uplands in general?
Certainly, I don't think we're in danger of losing mountain hares as a species in Scotland over the sort of the time frames that the Rob has just been talking about, a sort of 50 to 100 years. I certainly hope not anyway. And I think we have to remember that all land uses will have positive and negative effects on different species. Depending on the direction that land use and land cover changes in our uplands, mountain hares may well become far less numerous than they currently are. But I think that they will persist. If we move to a more wooded uplands, more forested uplands, I think it's possible the mountain hares will persist, but at much lower numbers. That very much depends on the type of forestry that we have and the management associated with that forestry. Large coniferous plantations are not going to be good for mountain hares, and any licensed culling of mountain hares associated with woodland expansion is obviously going to have local detrimental effects on mountain hares. But to answer your question, I think I think mountain hares are here for the long term.
And I wanted to get both of your opinions on this, and I think we might have covered it earlier on in the podcast, but are there any other groups or organisations out there that you would like to spotlight as doing a particularly good job for nature conservation in Scotland, maybe particularly towards the mountain hare, but not necessarily, Rob?
There are many, many groups and organisations doing lots of good things for nature conservation. So I think it would be difficult, possibly a bit unfair, to single out any one or two. So I can't really. There are lots of people and organisations doing good things out there for that will benefit mountain hares and other wildlife.
And Scott?
No, I'd agree with Rob. I mean, there's lots of people out there doing good things for wildlife, and I applaud them all.
A lot of things happening. No, it's a really exciting time to be involved in the sector. That's great, folks. Let me just bring the podcast to a bit of a close today. First up, we'll start with yourself, Rob. Can I just ask for some final thoughts from yourself? And firstly, is there anything that you'd like to signpost, and how do people get in touch with yourself?
In terms of getting in touch, well, they can contact me through Nature Scott. My email address is robert.rayner@nature.scott if you wish to contact me directly by email. There are other ways of contacting. You can go through the inquiries section of Nature Scott if you prefer. I hope to be carrying on doing this for, you know, a few years yet. And I hope I can continue to work with the likes of Scott and others on mountain hares and the volunteer mountain hare scheme that we've got running. So, because I think it's still relatively early days for that project. So we're hoping that it's going to be something that's going to last for, you know, a good many years. So I would also draw people's attention to that as well. You can find the details of that on the Nature Scott website or on the BTO website. And I think on the other ones as well, Scott, I think the GWCT website has a page as well, isn't it? I think.
And Scott, any closing thoughts from yourself, and how do people get in touch?
Anyone who wants to get in touch can, I'm sure, find my contact details on the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust website, or just get in touch with the general inquiry email address or telephone number. I mean, I think going forward, as you've said, you know, we're going to a very exciting times, lots of change in the uplands, some of which we have control over, a lot of which we don't. You know, and I think, you know, the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust is very much about researching and, you know, delivering informed decision making and informed management. And in terms of our wildlife species, we really need more rigorous monitoring of those species, you know, mountain hares particularly, but all species. And so I'd really encourage anyone with an interest to get involved in any of these monitoring programs, but obviously mountain hares.
Brilliant. Well, thank you both of you for coming on the podcast. I'm conscious of your time this afternoon, but it's been a really nice conversation, a really nice overview of the species and some of the conservation work that's been done for it. So on behalf of the Scottish Farm Advisory Service, I'll just say thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of Thrill the Hill. If you enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe, and follow this podcast. Leave us a review and let us know how we're doing. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can find all our details at the bottom of our show notes below.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.